We're Mem Tes Amid Beis, in middle of the page.
49B?
Yes.
49B2, second column. Before the Gemara was talking about supporting kids, if you have to force, over six, under six, you can force them and so on. But the Gemara is in the middle of discussing a number of takonis, the number of decrees that were made in the city of Usha when the big Bezdin was in Golus there. Okay? So Amir Ab Ilah, Amir Ab Rish Lakish, Shabbalah said the name of Rish Lakish. Usha Eskinum, they made a decree in Usha. Hakaisa Konuchasul Lebanim. A guy still alive, and he writes all his properties over for his kids while he's alive. Hu V'ishtin Izunim Mehem. He and his wife, even though seemingly the property now belongs to the kids, because he wrote it all over to the kids, nevertheless, the kids have an obligation to support the father and mother, as long as they're alive. Even though it's their property, so normally they could say, listen, I don't want to support you, it's mine. So Nusha made a takana that they have to support the parents. Maskala Rab Zayda V'Yisem Rab Shua Ben Achmeni, so Rab Zayda asked the question. Or some... Some people say, as Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, he said, why do I need Rabbi Law to tell me this is what they did in Usha? G'deilim iza amru. Chachamim say even a greater thing than this. What do they say? Aman and nizaynis min chasif. Even when a man dies, and he wrote over all his properties to his kids, or he died and therefore the kids inherit the property, right? 49, what? Fifteen lines in the bottom. As he says, they said even something greater than this. That even the widow, Nizainis min Chasav, the Gemara says like this, when a father dies, so the kids inherit. Right? Nevertheless, the widow has to be supported from the property. Right? So he says, if the Gemara says the widow is supported from the property, why would I need to say him and his wife are supported from the property? It's a given. It's for sure. Okay? Because he himself gave it to the children. So of course he meant that he should still be supported. Where do we see such a thing? What?
What about his wife?
No, that's the widow. No, the widow's his wife. The Shalach Rabin Begarta, because Rabin sent such a letter. Misha Mes, the guy died. V'niach Almano Bas. And he left over a widow, right, his wife, and a daughter. Amana nizanis min chasid. The widow is sustained from the property. Okay? In other words, like this. This is speaking in a case, Rashi says, that there were no sons. A man died, he left over a wife and a daughter. Who inherits if there's no son? The daughter inherits, correct? That's what the Torah says. So the din is, the widow is supported from the estate. The widow is supported from the estate. What happens, Nisus Abbas, now the daughter who owns the property, got married. Yeah? Almanasa Nizainis Menachasa. The father's widow is still supported, even though now she married another guy. Right? And now it belongs to the husband. She still gets supported from the estate. Not only that, but Beis Abbas, when the daughter finally dies, without kids, then what's the din? Her husband inherits the entire estate. Okay? And her husband, then the Amr Abyeis, so the Gemara tells a story. Amr Abyeuda ben Achaisesh Abyeisi ben Abchanina, Abyeuda, the nephew, the son of his sister, Ayadi Hoya Maisa. I had such a story happened to me. The Amru Amana Nizainis Minachasov. So the Amana gets supported from the property. Okay? What's the Gemara? The Gemara is asking a very simple question. Rabbi Eloh said in Usha, they made a takana, right? That a guy writes all his properties over to the kid, him and his wife get supported from the kids, right? So the Gemara said, why did he need to tell me that? It's obvious, then even the widow gets supported from the property. Even the daughter gets supported from the property. Like, why in the world would I need a decree in Usha to say such a thing if it's a given in halacha, that the wife gets supported. So he says, I'll tell you why. Because Mahu, the time I would think, Hossam, in the case of the widow, the lack of the tarach, there's no one that's going to, who's going to support her? The widow died, the guy died, right? He left over a widow. Who's going to care about the widow? So the Chachamim, yeah, right, they couldn't care less about it. If it's not there, first of all, it could be not her children. It could be the husband's children, and he married this lady, right? And then he died. So who's going to take care of the widow? So over there, there's nobody to take care of him. Maybe that's why the Chachamim said the woman gets it. But Aval Hacha, but here when there's a husband and a wife, what was the decree in Usha? That if a guy writes all his properties to the kids, he didn't die. He writes over all his properties to the kids. Him and his wife get supported from the estate. Right? So I would think maybe the husband and wife don't get supported from the estate. Let him go work for a living. Women didn't work in those days. You can't say let the widow go work. She didn't. So then I would think, you know why a widow gets supported from the estate? Because nobody else is going to support her. But over here, where the guy writes over all his property to the kids, right? He probably had a plan of how to support himself. So I would think maybe the husband and the wife do not get supported from the estate. So Usha came along in the city of Usha. They decreed, no, she still gets supported from the estate.
They both get supported.
Both of them. Okay? So this is what Rabbi Elah said. Rabbi Elah said, if a guy writes over all his properties to his kids while he's alive, even though legally they own it, but the husband and wife get supported from the estate as long as they live. Okay? What's the chiddush? We learned already the widow gets supported from the estate. Right? Why did they have to tell me that then? So the Gemara says, no, I would think a widow gets supported from the estate because there's nobody else to support her. But the husband and wife will let him go work and support his wife. So he say, no, he still gets supported from the estate. So now the Gemara asks the question, is the halacha like Rav Ila, that the husband who writes over all the property to his kids does get supported from the estate or not? Is the halacha like him or not? So Gemara says, I'll prove to you the halacha is not like him. Why? Gemara says like this, Tashma, Rab Chanina, Rab Yehonas, and Rav Kaime. Rab Chanina, two rabbis. Rab Chanina and Rab Yehonas were standing together. Asahu Gavra, a certain guy came, Gachem Venafki Lebnes and Nakari. He kissed Rab Yehonas on his foot. Okay, two rabbis are standing together. Rab Chanina and Rab Yehonas are standing together. Yeah? And all of a sudden a guy comes over to Rab Yehonas and he kisses his feet. Okay? Amalei Rab Chanina, so Rab Chanina said to Rab Yehonas, my high, why is he kissing your feet? You know, it's an expression, kiss my feet, this is where the expression comes from. You kiss my feet. Amalei says, I'll tell you what happened. Kesev Nechasev Lebanafu, this guy wrote over his property to his sons, and the sons did not want to support him. Vasinu Lezane, and I forced the kids to support him. So therefore he was thankful to me. Rabbi Yehonasan said, why did the guy kiss my feet? Because he wrote over all his property to the kids, and I ruled that the kids who didn't want to were forced to support him. Which was really what Rab Elah said, right? But from the story it implies that he bent over backwards, he went beyond the halacha. If the halacha is that the kid has to support the parent, what's he thanking Rabbi Yehonasan for? That's the halacha, Rabbi Yehonasan. In other words, when he kissed Rabbi Yehonasan, it shows that Rabbi Yehonasan went out of his way and made a takana for this guy's benefit. Right? But if the halacha is that if you write over your property to your kids, you get supported anyway, so what did Rabbi Yehonasan do that he kissed his feet? If somebody asks Rav Shaila, are you allowed to do something? And the Rav said, yeah, you're allowed to do it. Because that's what halacha says. You're not going to kiss your feet. That's what halacha says. If halacha says no, and you find a loophole to make it, yeah, so then the guy will kiss your feet. The Gemara said the fact that the guy kissed Rabbi Yonasan's feet shows that really the halacha is that they don't get supported from the estate. Which means halacha is not like Rabbi Ila. Right? Of Usha. So that's what he says. Mishum iyamet bishleim alav dina. If the halacha is not like Rabbi Ila, meaning halachically they do not get supported from the estate. Mishum achi asinu. Therefore, he forced him to do it. Forcing him means if that's the halacha, you don't force him. That's the halacha. Eli amir dina. But if you said the din is that the kid gets, the parents get supported from the estate anyway, asini boy, why did he have to force the kid? That's the halacha. So we see the Gemara Paskins, by the way, that you don't have to give. If you write over all your properties to the kids, normally you do not have to support them, the parents.
They don't
have to. Yeah. Right, the kids don't have to support. Rabbi Yonasan, in that particular case, for whatever reason it was, made the kids do it.
So this story did take place in Usha. Took place outside of Usha, must have been. Because
yeah, well no, if the question is, was the Usha Takon accepted universally?
Right.
So Gemara said, obviously not. Because if it was accepted universally, why is he kissing his feet? That's the halacha. Exactly. The fact that he kissed his feet means halacha, not like that. And Rabbi Yonasan went out of his way to help out the guy. So therefore, he kissed his feet. Okay, now the Gemara talks about tzedakah. Very famous Gemaras that we're learning now. When were you born? Huh? The Gemara tells a story in Saita that Yaakov raised his grandson because the parents died and he raised them. And one time he asked him for a cup of water. The grandfather who raised his grandson asked him for a cup of water. He says, I'm not your son. I don't have to do it. It's Gemara in Saita. Close to the end of Saita. He said, I don't have to support, I don't have to give, you're not my father. Even then they weren't grateful. Today?
No.
He said, I'm not your son, I don't have to do
what
it.
What happened then?
Nothing. The Gemara says, raise me, and I'll kick you in the, not kiss your feet. I'll kick you. Okay, now the Gemara says like this. We know that then by tzedakah is you have an obligation to give 10%. Right? Preferred, and the Gemara is going to talk about this now. Preferred is 20%. Chumash.
Preferred is 40%.
For you, 80%.
To the shul.
Of course, there's no way else. Amir Rabbi Loi said. Again, the Gemara is just quoting different takonas of Rabbi Ila that from Usha. Says like this. Ba'usha is kin amavazvez, al yavazvez zeisim chumash. You shouldn't give more than 20%. Okay? Because the bizbus. To spend a lot of money, not more than 20%. We're gonna discuss this in a minute. Tanya nami hachi. So this says in the Braisa, Hamevazves, Ayevazves, Sheyote Mechemish. Do not give more than 20% of your earnings to Tzedakah. Why not? Shema Yitztarech Lebrius. Maybe you're gonna give away all your money, then you're gonna have to collect Tzedakah. It's not a good idea. It's inappropriate. So the Gemara says, Taka, O Maise Be'echot Shabika Shalavazvez Yosef Mechemish. Just Taka, in the time of the Gemara, a guy who wanted to give more than 20%, V'le'yaniach Le'chaveri. His friend didn't let him. So now the Gemara is asking, who's the guy that wanted to do it, and who's the friend that didn't let him? So the Gemara says, Umani, who is it? Rav Yeshevav. Okay? Who's the colleague that didn't let him do it? Rabbi Yeshevav. Amrlai, some people say no. Rabbi Yeshevav was the one that wanted to give more than 20%. V'le'anicha chaverin, his friend didn't let him. Who was the friend? Rabbi Akiva. Okay? So there's just two versions. Whether Rabbi Yeshevav was one that didn't let the guy give more, or Rabbi Yeshevav wanted to give more, and Rabbi Akiva didn't let him. Okay? So now the Gemara says like this. How do we learn this out from a pasuk? Where do we learn this out from? The concept of 20%, right, of giving tzedakah. Where do we learn it out from? So the Gemara says, Amr of Nachman, the same Rav Acha ben Yaakov, Rav Nachman or Rav Acha ben Yaakov said, Maikro, where do we learn the pasuk of giving 20%? It says, As chol asher titen li, aser asrenu loch. What did Yaakov Avinu say to Hashem? Whatever you give me, I'll give aser asrenu loch. What's the double expression? A tenth and a tenth. Aser asrenu. 10 and 10 is 20. So from here we see that you have to give 20%.
No, you don't have to. You said 10%. 20%.
But the Gemara says, you see, it's preferable to give 20%. So the Gemara, what?
Sorry. It's not a mitzvah that I said to give Aser, right? It's
believed. Sure it is.
Huh?
I said.
From here?
I mean, not in this passage. That was Yaakov Avinu before Matan Torah. But it says, Aser to Aser. But that's by Tvos Arecha. But there's a, yeah, Nilchot Tzedakah, the Gemara learns it out. But here the Gemara is learning out from the fact that Yaakov Avinu said, Aser, Aserenu, teaches Aser, Aserenu, 10 and 10 is 20. But the Gemara says, 1 minute. Haleidami Yisura Basur Yisura Kama. The second tithe is not as good as the first tithe. Why? It's very simple. If you give the Mefarshim explain why the Gemara is talking like this, but this is what Rashi and the Mefarshim explain what the Gemara means. The Gemara says the second 10% is not like the first 10%. Why? Because if you have 100, let's say you have 100, right? So 10% is 10. So you're left with 90. The second 10% is from 90, which is 9.
Oh.
So the Gemara says it's not the fifth. Because the first 10 is 10 out of 100, right? But now you're left with 90, so the second 10% is not the 10%. So it's not the fifth. So the Gemara says, no, the fact that it says, Aser Asrenu, teaches us that the second 10% is like the first 10%. Meaning, just like the first 10% would be 10, the second 10% would also be 10 out of the 100. And he says at the bottom, he brings out Shittim B'Kubetz and asks the question, 1 minute. Why can't it just mean 20% from the whole thing? The Gemara is learning 10% and then another 10%.
Is that before or after living expenses?
Why not just 20 out of 100?
No, I'm very serious.
Before living expenses, after taxes.
Before living expenses, after taxes.
Correct. Okay, now.
Where does the Gemara take into consideration taxes or living?
So Taisus over here, by the way, says in the small Taisus, the second Taisus, Ayivaz V'yesim Chomish, Taisus brings down to Yerushalmi that says like this. The first time, you can give 20%, more than 20%. Afterwards, from every year, you should only give a fifth of the profit. And that's the way the tzedakah works, according to Yerushalmi. The first year you give 10% from what you have, and the second year you give 10% from the profits. Let's say you have $1,000, right? So the first year you give 10%. So you give $100 to tzedakah. We're talking about 20%, $200 to tzedakah. Then the next year, you only give what you invested, the profit of what you invested. So let's say you had $800 left after you gave tzedakah, right? And now you invested it, and it made $100 profit. So you don't give again 10% from the 900. You get 20% from the 100 that you made, right? The first year you give from what you have, and then the second year you just give from the profits that you made. 20% to 10%. Now I want to explain one thing over here. The Gemara, the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya that when it comes nowadays to giving tzedakah, you don't have to worry about 10%, or 20%. He says, when the Gemara says over here, this is the source of the Gemara, by the way. When the Gemara says, Yivaz v'zeisim mechaymish, you shouldn't give more than 20%, that's speaking when you're talking about the mitzvah of tzedakah. There's a mitzvah of tzedakah. If you're talking about what is the mitzvah of tzedakah, minimum 10%, max 20%. Okay, that's... But he says that's only in the din of tzedakah if somebody didn't sin. Daniel says, Chato'echa b'tzedakah pereik. You have to redeem your sins with tzedakah. Like Dr. Rebbe explains in Igeres Teshuva, years ago people used to bring korbanos. Right? Then afterwards, there was no Beis Hamikdash, they would fast a lot. Nowadays, Dr. Rebbe says you're not allowed to fast. Because the Gemara says you're a sinner if you fast. So then you give tzedakah. And he calls the pasuk that Daniel says, Chato'echa b'tzedakah pereik. Redeem your sins with tzedakah. Chato'echa, your sins b'tzedakah pereik. Redeem them with tzedakah. So the Alter Rebbe says, he doesn't say this, I'm adding paraphrasing. Unless if your name is Jack Benny, the pasuk says, Kol asher la'ish yitein ba'ad nafshi. Wherever he owns, he'll give to save his life. If a guy is dying, and they'll say, no, 1 minute. To save my life, you can only spend 10%. Beyond that, just let me die. So unless you're Jack Benny, it doesn't work like that. Whatever, to save your life, you give whatever you have, yeah? So the Alter Rebbe says, then this din of not giving more than 20% doesn't apply. If you don't sin, and there's a din of tzedakah, right? How much tzedakah should you give, the Gemara says, not more than 20%, because then you're going to have to collect tzedakah. Well, what are you going to live on? You're giving away all your money. So then you're going to need tzedakah. So the Gemara says, in tzedakah, the din is, you don't give more than 20%. But what happens if a person sins, and who doesn't, and they need to redeem their sins with money, that whole concept doesn't exist.
Excuse me, I have a question.
Yeah, does it?
How about if somebody does all this, however, upon their deathbed, they have...
No, it says when you die, you can give away all your money to tzedakah. No, it does say.
No, I'm serious.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're dying, you give all your money away to a charity.
409 North Foothill.
I don't know
how much longer, but we'll forward the mail.
Up there email in Shemayim as like having given kicked out again? Before death or after death? No, I'm serious.
No, it's as if you gave it.
What?
As if you gave it.
Oh, I have a chance.
He gave, it doesn't say he gave more than 20%, number one. And he gave for Klal Yisrael, wasn't it?
He gives him a pleasure, he gives him a pleasure, so
okay, then the Gemara continues. So this is finished with the tzedakah aspect. Now the Gemara talks about educating your kids. That is very interesting Gemara here. Am Rav Simi Barashi, so first Rav Simi Barashi said like this. Until now, the Gemara quoted three decrees from Usha. Okay? There was... Here. I'm just going to go back into the Gemara to read. And just listen carefully. The first thing the Gemara said about Usha, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi La, Amar Reish Lakish, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina. Bu Usha is kinu. Yeah? That what's the takana? That a guy has to support his kids when they're young. Okay? But how many people were quoted? Rabbi Ila, in the name of Reish Lakish, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina. Three rabbis were mentioned in it. The next time the Gemara mentioned it is Amar Abila, Amar Reish Lakish. Only two names mentioned. The last time the Gemara says, in what we just learned, Amar Abila Ba'usha Eskinu. It's very interesting. The Gemara mentions three takanas of Usha in the name of Rabila. The first one, he mentioned the name of Reish Lakish and the name of somebody else. The second Usha decree, he only mentioned it in the name of Reish Lakish. The third one, he just said his own name. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Simi Barashi, Ushmuas Halalu Mismatas Vahilchas. They keep going downward. In the way that you're teaching the kids, it's going downwards. Like we said, first he mentioned three rabbis, then two, then one. V'simonach, and the simon is, K'tanim, Kosvu, Ubizbizu. Mine is wrote and dispersed. This refers to the three takanas of Usha. Okay, that's it. Next.
What's the reason?
No, the Gemara is saying it's in a negative way. Yeah.
Is it going to talk about the fact that, like, when a father can't teach a son, he has to give it over to a rabbi?
Well, not here. That's Gemara in Kedusha. But here the Gemara speaks about educating the kids now. Amar Rav Simi Bar Ashi. Rav Simi Bar Ashi said. I'm sorry, Amar Rav Yitzchok. Ba'usha iskinu. This is contrary to, don't do this today in the world, you'll be end up in jail. Ba'usha, they made a takana, she had them as galgal and b'nayat shtei masri shana. If your kid's not interested in learning, you put up with him until he's 12. Mikan ve'elach, yerded imer l'chai, you make his life miserable. Make the kid's life miserable. In other words, if the son refuses to study Torah, okay? So until the kid's 12, you try to be nice, persuade him nicely. After 12, the Gemara says, you make him miserable. Punish him with a strap, withhold sustenance from him.
Inappropriate.
Okay, then the Gemara says like this. So the Gemara says, Eina, it's not true. We learned a different din, opposite of this. Rashi says, was a Malamatinakis. Afshilas was a teacher of kids. That's what he did for a living. So Rav gave him guidance in this. What did Rav say to him? Like this. Batimi Bashir's late to Kabul. Don't take a student under 6. Okay? Bashis, when a kid's 6, Kabul, accept him in your school. V'safalei ketura, and stuff him with Torah like you stuff an ox. The Gemara says, to fatten up the ox, they used to stuff him with food. Okay, so Yizlachayda, you see from here, when the Gemara says the expression, stuff him with food, meaning even against the will. You stuff the ox with food, right? You stick food down the ox's mouth. So Lecheira, what did Rav tell Rav Shilas? That under 6 don't accept the kid. When he's 6, beat him up, force him to learn Torah. You just got to tell me 12, right, until 12, be nice. And over 12, force him. And here, the Gemara says at the age of 6, so the Gemara says like this, Safalei Ketura, it's not a contradiction. When he's 6 years old, you stuff him with Torah. But you still do it nicely. But you don't do it until the kid's 15. Until 12. Meaning like this, the answer to the Gemara is very simple. At the age of 6, you force him, but nicely. 12... force him against his will. Even beating him up or whatever it takes.
What happened to teach the child according to his way?
Huh?
What happened to teach the child according to his way? They didn't believe him.
I'll do it anyway.
I think it's a wonderful idea, actually.
Didn't Shlomo Amalek say it's better rather?
Yeah, but that's what he says over 12. Ibai Sam, another answer is like this. Loikasha. The Gemara has a contradiction. Our din says over 12 force him. And Rav told Rav Shilas, over 6 force him. So first the Gemara answered, no, over 6 force him, but nicely. Over 12, hit him. Or the Gemara answers, there's a difference between Chumash and Mishnah. Rav says 6 represents Chumash. All the Mishnah, when it comes to Mishnah, is different. Okay? Why? Where do we see this difference? The Amr Abaye says like this. Amr Ali Aim, mother told me, and as the Rashi says in Kedushin, Abaye's mother died when he was born. The famous Abaye's mother, in fact, why was he called Abaye? Asher Becha Yerucham Yosim. Abaye, Aleph Beis Yud Yud. Why was he called Abaye? His mother died when he was born. So he gave him a name, Abaye, which is the Pasuk, Asher, Becha, Yerucham Yosim. In you, we comforted the orphan. So he was raised by a nurse. He was raised by his uncle, Rabbah, who was Abaye's uncle, but he had a nurse that raised him as a kid. And Abaye, throughout Shas, says a lot of smart things that his mother told him. This nurse told him. And he called her Amli Ein. Whenever Abaye says, my mother told me, it doesn't mean his mother, it means the nurse that raised him. What did she say? She was a brilliant woman. She gave him medical advice and practical advice and Torah advice. She said to him like this, my mother told me, Bashis Lemikra. When a kid's 6, teach him Chumash. Bat Eser Lemishnah. When he's 10 years old, teach him Mishnah. Bat Tleser, when a kid is 13, then he has to fast Me'es Les, the 24-hour fasts. Okay? Ubetinekis Bas Tleser, and a girl in her 12th year. Now, that means like this. As he explains it, so Rashi and Tais is explained like this. 2 years, the Gemara says like this. He doesn't say 13 years old. The mother said to him, when he's in the 13th year, that means he's 12. And this, by the way, the Halacha in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Yom Kippur. 2 years before a kid's 12, you teach him, train him fasting hours, X amount of hours during Yom Kippur. When he's 12, he has to fast the whole day. And a girl in the 12th year, meaning the same thing, she becomes bat mitzvah a year earlier, so she has to fast a year earlier. But it's interesting, Rashi explains a different reason. Why does a girl fast younger than a boy? But that's saying, Rashi says different than that.
She matures earlier.
Nach! He says like this. The Gemara says, Torah, mitasheshes kecha shel adam. Torah weakens a person. Girls don't learn Torah. Boys learn Torah, so they're weaker, so they can't fast until they're 13. Girls don't learn Torah, they can fast at 11.
What does weaken mean? Can you kind of clarify?
Because a person who's not overly indulged, indulged in learning Torah, loses his physical strength. The story in the Gemara is the famous Reish Lakish, Reb Shimon Ben Lakish, who ended up to be a very great sage.
It's kosher.
Thank you. Was a very great sage. He used to be a robber, a gangster. And Reb Yechanan was very handsome, but Reb Yechanan didn't have a beard. The Gemara says Reb Yechanan, not because he shaved, he just didn't have a beard. Okay? And Reb Yechanan was extremely handsome. This is what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. And Reb Yechanan was once bathing on the river. And the Reish Lakish saw him. And he thought it was a girl. So he jumped across the river. Mama, she jumped across the river. That's how strong he was. Then he saw it was a man. So Reb Yechanan said to him, if you would take your energy and learn Torah with your energy and might, Reb Yechanan told you, he was a very great neshama. He said, you will be very, very successful in learning. And I will, if you decide to learn Torah, I will give you my sister as a wife who's more beautiful than I am. So he accepted. When he wanted to jump back over the river, he fell in the middle. So Gemara says, the fact that he accepted to learn Torah made him weaker already, even before he actually started learning. And Reish Lakish ended up to be the colleague of Rabbi Yechanan and one of the greatest sages of the Gemara, of the Eretz Yisrael people. Rabbi and Reish Lakish were brothers-in-law. They always argued, but they were good friends. They just always argued in Allah. So the Gemara says,
but doesn't it say Rabbi Yochanan kind of killed Reish Lakish? I mean,
not that he killed him. Whatever.
With some spiritual.
The sister didn't disturb him before Tachnus. Anyway, so the Gemara says like this. Taisus discusses over here when the Pasuk says, when the Gemara says 6-year-old should start learning Chumash, Taisus says it doesn't mean in the 6th year.
Yeah.
It means when he, Taisus says it means Barshitz v'yom echad. That means he's 6 years old. Okay, let's put it this way. When a baby's born, until they're 1 year old, they're in the first year. When they hit the first birthday, they're starting the second year. That's why you say you compare to them the one ahead. Now, there's a big machoikis in the Rishonim, when the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Ben Chomesh Shanim LeMikra. Does it mean when you're 5 years old, you start learning Chumash? Or does it mean when you enter the fifth year, you start learning Chumash? Okay? Now, when the Mishnah says, Ben Shleish Esrei LeMitzvahs, that doesn't mean entering the 13th year, because then you'd be Bar Mitzvah at 12. Correct? And we know Bar Mitzvah is 13. So Taisa says, when it says in the Gemara here, you start learning Chumash at 6, Taisa says, 6, just like Esa LeMishnah, because it can Pirkei Avos, it means that because it has to be similar to Ben Yud Gimel LeMitzvahs. Ben Yud Gimel LeMitzvahs, if you say it means the 5th year, the 10th year, then Bar Mitzvah will be when he enters the 13th year. One second. So he says, it's not similar to Ben Atzer, because, so he says, you start learning, and Tosfos says, the Mishnah says 10, the Mishnah, why did Gemara say here 12? It means you start learning with the Mishnah at 10, but at 12 you beat him up. Because our Gemara says 12 you beat him up, for Mishnah. So Tosfos says it doesn't mean you start learning Mishnah with him at 12, because the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says you start learning Mishnah at 10. Correct? That's what the Mishnah says. So what it means is, Taisa says, you start learning with him at 10, and then at 12, he's not learning, then you beat him up.
It wouldn't seem like it would make sense to say at 13, he has to fast, because he's a Bar Mitzvah anyway. Why would the Gemara have to
No, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't mean 13. He means 13th year.
13th year.
Therefore, in Shulchan Aruch, it says, based on this Gemara,
yeah.
That...
There's no,
in the Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Yom Kippur, it says, from the age of 10, you start training them to 9 or 10, depending on the strength of the kid, to fast X amount of hours. When they're 12, or a girl 11, they fast the whole day time. Even though they're not Bar Mitzvah yet. Based on this Gemara.
Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah. Aruch Yom Kippur.
But why? They're not Bar Mitzvah yet.
But based on this Gemara. The Gemara says when they enter the 13th year, they should be able to fast. That's what Aruch is. No, it says in Aruch they should fast. I mean, if they're sick, you know, they're not Bar Mitzvah, but it says they should fast. That's what makes you chayiv. But 12, the Gemara, that's what the Gemara says here. Amar
li yein. So that's not considered a chinuch. That's considered, it's a chiyuv.
It's a chiyuv of chinuch. In other words, under 12, the chinuch is for hours. Right? But now he's chinuch, like what a kid puts on tefillin, let's say our custom 2 months before Bar Mitzvah. Right? The first month without a bracha, second month with a bracha. Okay? Why is he putting on a month before Bar Mitzvah with a bracha? Because now you're doing the proper chinuch completely.
So
even though he's not Bar Mitzvah yet.
So it's chinuch with the
mitzvah. That he could, and his nurse said that a boy 12 is able to fast and a girl 11 is able to fast. Why a girl able to fast younger? So Rashi says, because a girl doesn't learn Torah, so they're stronger. A boy learns Torah, so he's weaker. Okay, now the Gemara says like this, another thing. Amr Abai. Amr Aliyim. What?
I'm saying
this
whole.
That's what Rashi says. Rashi says...
But nowadays we teach the girls Torah.
She maharis lavi koyach she'enim etashez koyach b'lim et ha-teira. That's what Rashi says. That the girl is not doesn't get weakened by because she's not even learning Torah. Her mother teaches her home economics according to Torah. But now the mother said another interesting thing. Amr Abayim. Amr Liyim, my mother told me, Hai Bashita, a 6-year-old kid, the tarkele akraba that a scorpion bit him, b'yema demishlim shis loichayu. If he turns 6, the day he turns 6, a scorpion bit him, he will not live. Without a certain remedy. Okay? That's where Rashi learns. Maya Susi, what's the remedy for this thing? Listen to this. You take merarta de daya chivarta b'shikra. You take the bile of a white vulture with beer. You mix the bile, the liver.
Bile.
Bile is like the liver, no?
No, bile is the waste. No, bile is in the blood.
It's green.
It's
okay,
in the blood.
You take the bile of a white vulture. You mix it with beer. Neshafe, you rub some of the bile on the child, and then you give him to drink with beer.
Delicious.
Now, but there's machlekes Rashi and Tesis over here. And Rashi, Tesis learned, not like Rashi. Rashi says, in other words, the Gemara's expression is very funny, because the Gemara says, if a 6-year-old kid is bitten, and the day he turns 6, he's not going to live. So then the Gemara asks, what's the remedy? So Rashi learns the Gemara, what it means is, you're going to die if you don't do the remedy. But if you do the remedy, then you won't die. Yeah? Tesis learns differently. Tesis says, Rabbeinu Tam says, no, if you get bitten, you're going to die. What's the Gemara's question? What's the remedy? What do you do to not get bitten? What do you do that you shouldn't get bitten by a scorpion? So the Gemara says, you take the bile of a white vulture with beer, and you smear it on yourself. That's what Tayyip says. Because Tayyip says, because the Gemara says the guy's going to die, it simply means whatever you're going to do is not going to help. So what's the Gemara asking? What's the remedy? So Tayyip says the remedy is preventive medicine.
But before that, it's not kosher to drink it.
Bile is what makes the blood thick.
Beforehand.
Bile is in the blood. I believe so. Bile is part of the blood.
Yeah, it is sakana, that's for sure.
Just go drink blood because maybe you're going to get bit.
Not blood, it's beer.
No, but the part of the vulture.
The bile.
Bile is like the part of the vulture.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it's to save a life. It's okay.
Where are you going to find a vulture?
In those days, they had vultures.
Los Angeles,
they probably had, the local market had different remedies, you know. I mean,
Yeah, sure.
It's like the Chinese Chinatown. You have all the different herbs there. They had
Harry Potter.
That's it.
I'm pretty sure bile is in the blood.
Well, it comes from the liver. I don't know. You know, I mean, the blood.
The bile does come from the liver. I'm not.
Yes.
But I think it's what makes.
Okay, but I'm not way off.
No.
Okay.
But I think bile is what makes the blood thickens the blood.
You know, trust me. You're not getting bitten by a scorpion, and you're not doing this remedy.
Okay.
Amar Rav Katina. Rav Katina says. It's a very interesting Gemara over here. The Gemara says if you bring your kid in to learn Torah under 6, which the Gemara said before, don't bring him under 6. Now the Gemara says even more than that. If you bring your kid less than 6 years old to learn Torah, Rats Acharov, you're going to run after him to keep him healthy, Veina Magia, and you're not going to reach him, meaning the kid will not become healthy. In other words, like this, the Gemara says, like we just said before, Torah weakens the person. Torah weakens you. A kid under 6 who's learning Torah will not have any resistance to be able to be healthy. He says, don't bring in your kid under 6 to learn because he won't be healthy.
His immune system won't work.
Ikadamari, other people say, no, just the opposite. It's interesting, just the opposite. Chaveres rotten achrev. If you start a kid learning Torah very young, he'll be so advanced that his friends will run after him to catch up to him in learning, and they won't be able to. It's mamish, two opposite extremes. One says negative, don't learn with him under 6 because he won't be healthy. Then the other place says learn with him under 6 because he'll be so advanced. His friends will run after him to catch up to him. They'll never reach him. And the Gemara says, Tavayu Isinu. Both are right. What does it mean both are right? Cholish v'gomer, the kid will be weak, but he'll be very knowledgeable. So both are right. He's going to be sick, but he's going to know how to learn. Iboy Seima. No. Hadi kachish, hadi body. It depends on the kid. If the kid's a weak kid, don't learn Torah with him under six. If a kid's healthy kid, then learn Torah with him under six. It depends, push it on the kid.
Doesn't say in Tanya that we can the Nefesh Behemit, the Yisraelin, or...
What?
The learning Torah doesn't, not the goof.
No, but it awakens the goof also.
Oh, Nefesh Behemit, Yisraelin, and also this.
Yeah.
That's
what Gemara says. The physical strength.
And when it says learning Torah, what is it, what are we talking about? Chumash or?
Gemara says you go Chumash, Mishnah.
Anything in Torah?
Yeah.
Nefesh is one thing,
when
they get sick.
The Gemara doesn't say sick. I said he won't be healthy. You won't be able to keep him healthy.
How could that be? It's not a good thing.
Rashi says, in fact, there. Rashi says this very sharp expression in Rashi. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way Rashi interprets the Gemara, that if you're going to teach the kid under six, you're going to run after him to keep him healthy, but he's going to die anyway because he'll be too weak from the Torah learning. Wow. That's why Rav told Rav Shilas, don't take a kid in to learn. But it's much different today. First of all, kids going to school at three today, and they're already learning. Before they're born, they go, whatever. Yeah, expensive. The mother wants them out of the house. Mother doesn't want them out of the house. But the bottom line is, today's Torah learning is not the yesteryear Torah learning. I mean, when they learned, Abaye said, the same Abaye said in the Living Gemara, that a day that my mother, this nurse, Amelie Aim, he called her Aim, asked me to get her a cup of water, my whole day of learning was messed up. When these guys were learning, they concentrated. The worst thing, it's the interesting story. Now listen to this. Another takon in Usha. If the woman sells the miluk property while the husband was alive, umeis, if she dies, habal meitz im yad alokuchs. Let me tell this in a little bit of the thing we learned before. When a wife brings properties into a marriage, okay, this is called Nichsi Tzim Barzel and Nichsi Miluk. Here the Gemara is talking about Nichsi Miluk. Nichsi Miluk means the woman owned properties for whatever reason. Okay, she had from her father who died, she was an only child, she inherited the properties of the father, let's say. Now she marries somebody. Okay, so the din is, when she brings these properties into the marriage, the husband, the land belongs to her. The land belongs to her. The husband, huh? Yeah. The husband eats the fruits of the land. That means the profit of the land goes to the husband. The principle of the land stays to the woman. When she dies, the husband inherits it all. Okay, that's the thing. Now, what happened if a woman's married? She has Nichsi Milug, which means she keeps the property, the husband gets the fruit, the profits. And while the husband was alive, she sold the field to somebody. So obviously she's not selling the fruit, because that belongs to the husband. But she's selling the principle of the field. So the Gemara says in Usha, they made a takona, that when she dies, the husband goes to the buyers and takes away the land from them. Because he had first rights to the field. When he got married, he had the first rights that when the woman dies, he gets it. So he has a lien on the property from day one of the marriage. The buyers have a later lien. So that's what he says, like this. The woman sold the nichsim milug, meaning the principle of the field, while the husband was alive, umeisin, she dies. Okay? So the din was, habayil meitzim yad alokuchas. Okay? Because he's called the first buyer.
Can't take it away when she's still alive.
Huh?
When she's still alive, you can't take it away?
No.
Sounds like you're...
Because while she's alive, she owns the principle. But when she dies, he's considered the buyer, retroactively from the marriage. So Gemara says like this. Ashkechei Rav Yitzchok Var Yaisu Rababu. Okay? He met him, Davakoi Be'uchlus in the Usha. He was at a gathering of the men in Usha. Amalei Man Mored the Shmaisa the Usha. Who is the master of this din? Okay? Which rabbi said this din of Usha? Amalei Rabbi Yaisi Rab Chanina. Yeah? Rabbi Yaisi Rab Chanina said it. Like our Gemara says, Rabbi Yaisi Rab Chanina said it. The Gemara says like this. Tana Minei, Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef, asked Rabbi Abu, who said it? And he said, Rabbi Yaisi Rab Chanina. He reviewed it 40 times from him not to forget it. That means, Rashi learns over here, somebody shayin and learn, he learned that halacha 40 times. Rashi learns, when he asked the question, who said the din? And he said, Rabbi Yaisi Rab Chanina. He told him over 40 times, who said it? Not to forget it. 40 times, according to Rashi, he told him it was Rabbi Yaisi Rab Chanina. According to other Rishayinim, he learned the halacha 40 times not to forget it. V'damalei, and it was compared to him, that kilu imuchse bekisei, if it was placed in his pocket. Meaning, what does it mean? The way the Mefarshim explained, he still kept reviewing it. Either who said it, or the one that, what the din itself. That means even though he heard it 40 times, so that's how they learned in those days. So the Gemara said they learned everything 100 times, right? 100, 100 for one. This is what they did, these guys. They knew.
Right, when it says, Ashrechem, Torah Shabbatidecha, when you come to heaven, you have the Torah in your hand or something like that. Does that mean the Torah that you memorized all your life, or just the Torah that you just learned but maybe didn't review? Does that include that, or?
Both. Talmud Biyadi, actually, Gemara says, what's the expression Talmud Biyadi? Talmud is not in your hand. Talmud is in your brain.
Right.
It means you practice what you preach.
Oh, I thought it meant, oh, okay.
What does it mean, Talmud Biyadi?
The
Talmud is in his hand?
No, because it's...
Where's your Talmud? In the mind.
Right.
It means Talmud Biyadi means you lived with the Torah.
Is
not because of knowledge, it's uniqueness of Torah. The Kedusha of Torah breaks the body. Torah is so holy, it breaks your goof and nefesh abamis.
Oh, man, but I'm talking about the body.
So therefore, it breaks the body and nefesh abamis, so you get weaker. It's not because of knowledge.
It's not that because mentally you think...
No, it's the Kedusha of Torah. It breaks the klipa. What?
It's more like breaks the drive.
No, it means it weakens the body. Torah mitasheshes koichei shel adam. It doesn't say Torah mitasheshes taivis shel adam. Koichei shel adam means the physical strength of the person is weakened by Torah.
Even if he works out?
Even if he works out.
I heard from Mrs. Mengel. He said, which koich is a matish? The weekend, the koichei shel adam.
That's the spiritual stuff.
I said, I'm with everything. I realize Hashem is in charge of everything.
Thank you.
So this is the chayim there.
It's interesting, though, right? It says about Moshe Rabbeinu that he didn't get weaker when he was older.
That was unique to Moshe Rabbeinu. That was a miracle for Moshe Rabbeinu. Because his body was holy. Isha Olikim. Half God, half man. Moshe Rabbeinu's body went up to Har Sinai 40 days without eating.
Right.
So Moshe Rabbeinu's body was holy to begin with. So it never weakened. Wow. His learning never weakened him.
So was Aaron HaKohen.
Yeah.
Carried all those spices around for a whole year, you know.
Carried a lot of weight.
Good. 3,000 pounds or something he would carry on his belt wherever he went. Rashi brings it. From a midrash, it says that the Kohen Gadol, you know, at that time, he had all the different ketores and different things, and he used to carry it around his waist.
It's strong.
Yeah, very strong. They're big, big men, the Kohenim. You know.
There's one interesting taste of the last few minutes of the read. Taisus says a very interesting point. Taisus says, when the Gemara says that the wife who brings in Nichsim Milug and she sells the properties, the husband can go and take away the properties. Right? Because we said he has a first lien. So Taisus says there's an argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, the Reish Lakish we just mentioned, whether if you own Kinyan HaPeiros k'Kinyan HaGuf, if you own the fruits of the land, does that consider like you own the land? In other words, when the husband, the wife brings in the property, right? She owns the land. He owns the profits. It's called the payers. So the question is, when he owns the fruit, is that like he owns the land or not? So the Rabbi Yochanan holds, by owning the fruit, you own the land. Correct? So if that's the case, you don't need Usha to make that decree. Because the husband owns the land, she had no right to sell it. Right? Usha says that even though the sale is good, the husband has an earlier lien and therefore can take away the property. Right? So Taisa says, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that owning the fruit is like owning the land, then you don't need Usha's takana. Because she couldn't sell it anyway, it's his land. He owns the land also. So Taisa says either it's according to Reish Lakish, that says owning the fruit is not like owning the land, and according to him, you need the takana of Usha. Or, Taisa says one more thing, or it could be, it goes according to Rabbi Yochanan also, it's speaking when the husband doesn't eat the fruits. How? Somebody gave her a matana, and the condition the husband has nothing to do with the land. So then he doesn't eat the fruits either. Okay.